Life Audio.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Joined not as always in studios in the summer, boys. This is the first time the three of us have been together in quite some time. We're very busy men, traveling all the time, in demand. This is just the life that we lead, boys. But we're back in the studio, and we're back, I dare say, with some kind of nice, like, little throwback-y topics, dude. This feels like early career The Happy Rant. So if you've been with the show for a long time as a listener, if you want to kind of go back and get those throwback vibes to the early years right before you purchase your ticket to Happy Rant Live, which you should go and do, tickets are flying off the shelves, Piper. I'm hearing a lot of buzz that that room could fill up really quickly. So people are going to want to run to the website. What's the URL, Pipe?
It is thehappyrant.com, and there's just a nice big tab at the top that says the live show, and you can go there and get tickets. If you are considering whether or not to do this, listeners, the details are it's on September 24th. That's a Sunday evening, 7 p.m. It'll be in Indianapolis, so on the eve of the Gospel Coalition Conference. So if you're planning to come to town for that, just get there a little bit early. This will be the highlight. It'll be all downhill after that. It will be, you know, it's our last ever live show. It will also be our last episode, sort of a ride off into the sunset. We have ticket packages that include an exclusive t-shirt for the event that Josh Byers of Visual Theology is designing, which should be awesome. And as Ted mentioned, I mean, we are getting sales for this every single day. So it's not like we just had a little spike and we're hyping this thing up. Like the tickets actually are moving, which is really encouraging. It'll be fun to be in a room full of listeners. Interacting totally with y'all is our favorite thing. So should be a blast.
That's going to be a wild night, dude. Given that it's our last thing, I anticipate like hanging around real late afterwards till the last dog's hung. I don't know. I think it's going to be fun. I look forward to it. We're all going to have merch and gear and kind of stuff for our new projects there to sell and promote. So that'll be fun too. Folks can, you know, kind of learn where they can hear us into the future if that's something they want to do. I'm fired up about it. But boys, I'm also fired up about talking some ministry stuff a la the early years of the show. We'll get into that right after this break.
Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Okay, boys, we're back. Pipe, you sent along a few intriguing ideas that I think were born of messages from listeners. I think these are fascinating because this kind of takes us back to even before the Happy Rant started, the blogosphere started. And right around, I don't know, the year 2000 or shortly thereafter, if you were a ministry dude who had like any ambition as a writer, You were firing up that blog, dude. You were getting that blog cranked up, going into your little like extra bedroom in your apartment and photographing a stack of books and a cup of coffee and making that your banner image and doing blogs. So your topic here was how blogs launched whole ministry careers. And I think this is fascinating because we could probably point to a handful of people who are now kind of in our vintage age-wise who really benefited from the blogosphere. What were you thinking with this one?
Well, just thinking about how did they get here kind of thing. You know, there are people who are really well respected voices in the kind of the broader Christian sphere or the reform sphere, I should say, guys like Trevin Wax and Justin Taylor and Jared Wilson, and I'm sure there are others that are Tim Challies.
Yeah,
and their launch point was writing on the internet to whoever to whosoever discovered their blog. You know, like it was, you know, these are the Blogspot days, so it's like trevinwax.blogspot.com, you know, that kind of thing. That's where I started on the internet in 2011 or something like that, just that my writing, and they predated me by a few years, so we're talking, you know, 15, 20 years ago in some cases. And I just think it's crazy that there are guys who are legitimately kind of ministerially significant now.
Yeah.
And at the time, they were perceived as like these bloggers in their mom's basement. Like, mom's basement was the favorite disparagement of bloggers. And I don't know. I just find great joy of picturing like Jared C. hanging in his mom's basement writing blogs.
I'm sure his mom has a lovely basement. I would be interested in seeing all those guys' mom's basements, actually. Like, just out of curiosity. But yeah, like, it's weird in that the only qualification was, I have an internet connection. You know what I mean? So you've got all these impressive guys who have, like, gone on to have lots of degrees and sort of be impressive in all the traditional ways. But it's like, back then they weren't impressive. They just had an internet connection. And those guys that you mentioned had blogs kind of long before they had book deals. You know, like with KDY, I think he sort of retroactively fired up the blog after we did Why We're Not Emergent. And then he got real into it too, but like the guys that you mentioned
used to be, you know, before platform became a thing, you know, so when I worked in publishing, especially the last several years, that one of the, unfortunately, one of the great considerations for an author was, what is their reach? What is their platform? And you looked mostly at social media. 10 years prior to that, blog following, it was sort of publishers had to come to terms with the fact that this person gets 10,000 people a month or 20,000 people a month, or, you know, in some cases 100,000 people a month reading their posts. So this might actually be a platform. It actually could get you book deals.
I know, dude, which is so wild and crazy to think about. But that was, you know, this is all very time capsule-y circa the beginning of the internet, where things just kind of got crazy and people kind of lost their minds for a little bit. But baby, you were transitioning into ministry right around when all this was popping off with the blogosphere. I want you to answer two questions for me. One, when you think about these guys and their blogs, who had the best blog? So thinking back to like Between Two Worlds and like Trevin Wax and whatever Jared was doing at the time, who had the best blog? And then also, did you dip your toes into the blogosphere waters at all in those early years? Because like, I think I met you probably after you had kind of come and gone with the blog thing. And I think you met me right when I was kind of ramping down caring about blogging. But what was your experience with all of it?
Yeah, baby, that's interesting because I never, it's kind of like podcasting for me. I've never gotten that into it, you know? So for me, it was like somebody recommending, hey, read this, you know, read this blog post by this dude. And I'd be like, okay, if I get around to it. But there was never any consistency with it. I never followed. Yeah. It's kind of like Substack now. It's like newsletters now. I haven't sign up for anybody's thing. There's no reason, you know, there's no philosophy behind it. The thing that I'm kind of fascinated by though is like what you guys just talked about. Like, it would be really interesting if we could get every one of those dudes on the pod and say, hey, do you love that you launched your career by becoming a blogger? And I would love to hear how many of them would say, oh no, that's not how I did it at all.
Yeah, they
would. Every one of them, I think, I think every one of them would say, no, it wasn't the blog. The blog just helped supplement things.
Yeah,
that
it was
were
the fact
on.
That I was a teaching assistant at Trinity, you know, and I taught Intro to Old Testament. That did it, you know.
Yeah, don't just Don't just act like it was like me, like writing, you know, some anonymous blog that grew in popularity on the internet is what, you know, gave me all of my popularity and my, you know,
exactly.
my fame. But I just, exactly. I just wonder how big of an insult that is now to say that, because, and the reason why I say that too.
That's a fascinating question. Yeah.
Well, check it out. So I was at a conf. I mean, this was 8 years ago now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago. It was the Basics Conf. It's a local conf in Cleveland that Alistair Begg throws on.
Yeah.
And I was there. It was probably a decade ago. And KDY was one of the dudes.
Yeah.
And he name checked the book that you wrote with him.
Uh-huh.
And he said, boy, not a lot of convos about the emerging church anymore. It was a little bit of a ha.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And then he also said... But he also kind of called himself out on the blog thing. He said, "And how would you like to have the reputation as not like having, you know, not having the reputation as somebody who's written like this like epic book or who's known for these like really deep theological things, but just that you were a blogger." So he kind of self-deprecated himself a little bit. Yeah. He called himself out on that. But but that's the only time I've ever really heard that happen. You know what I'm saying?
That's fascinating. Yeah, they would all, it seems to me, have a really arm's lengthy kind of relationship with it, because all those guys that we've mentioned have kind of like made their way in academia. You know, the academy has kind of been or publishing, like traditional publishing. Dude, the really interesting one to me, and I tip the hat to this guy, because early in my career, I think I just naturally hated all book critics. Like, I felt like it was sort of my job to hate book critics. And
wait, when did early in your career end, and has it ended?
Yeah, a week and a half ago, you know. I don't know that it's actually
right before
ended.
We hit record on this
right
episode.
Before we hit record. But yeah, Challies, just kind of realizing, wait a minute, the way to leverage the internet is to sort of be the clearinghouse for reviews that everybody in our tribe would want to read. So like book X gets published. Challies is kind of the first one to the marketplace with like a thoughtful review about it. In retrospect, that strikes me as a really fascinatingly effective way to have done it. And it also gives your blog a sense of, you're not waking up every morning going, what am I going to write about? Like the roadmap is already there. And, you know, now that we have 2 decades of data on who did the internet well, like that strikes me as a pretty good one.
Man, Challies was onto something early with that, and having worked in publishing and then also having been sort of a minor blogger, you know, I came to it too late, and I was never very good at it from sort of a like finding internet success. The Challies did a few things that I can't say of any other blogger. One was he is the first that I can recall to just be crushing in the Christian space the sort of aggregated links. He would do like, I don't know, it was Friday Five or a la carte, as whatever he called it. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think he still does it. But I remember, you know, I on those rare occasions when something that I wrote would be highlighted in his a la carte.
Yeah.
My traffic on my site would explode. And he was a leverage powerhouse for stuff like that. Same thing for, you know, on the publishing side, you know, if we sent him books to review and he actually gave them a serious review, or like, this is, you know, one of my 5 recommended this month, you can go on the Amazon rankings and you can look at that day and that book climb, you know, just shoot up.
A lot of influence for sure.
And to your point, it wasn't just, there are a lot of people who have sort of leveraged traffic. He maintained a, like, he sort of, in the same way that Crossway sort of has a, like, if it comes out from Crossway, you know what it is in terms of theological framework, kind of who it's aimed at. You know, there's some breadth, but also like, it's these kinds of books. Challies was this kind of website. So you knew what he was going to be saying in terms of the lane he was in, which makes him very reliable. If you want that kind of take on a book, that kind of, and it's thoughtful, it's thorough. He crushed it in terms of carving out his space in ways that most guys didn't. And it's only been in the last few years that he's moved more into kind of writing ministerially, where he's
interesting.
as opposed to, you know, so he wrote the Visual Theology books with Josh Byers. Yeah. Byers was kind of the designer and co-author. But then, you know, now when you go to his website, he's writing very pastorally. Mm-hmm. But for a long time, he was more aggregator reviewer, and it was a rare kind of effective channel to be in.
Yeah, it worked for him. It popped. Baby, I have a question for you.
Yeah, man.
Regarding, like, why we kind of never really fell in love with blogging. And I don't know. I think for me, to really go into something as a writer, and by that I mean primarily like books and movies, but to some degree magazines, which I know you have a high view of magazines as well. I have to be able to feel romantic about it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I ever felt romantic about like having a website, you know. But there were guys who got really into it, and I think they're the same kind of guys who, whenever a technology is new, get kind of excited about that technology. And that just was never me, and I'm guessing it was never you. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to. There's no risk. I am. Yeah. I'm gonna sound as ridiculous as one can possibly sound by this next comment. I think for me, baby, and I think this is kind of what you're hinting at a little bit, is, dude, there's no pictures on a blog. it's kind of dull. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like just clicking on something just to read content. That's why I love magazines, right? You're getting the full experience. You're getting photography and you're getting all kinds of different, like you're digging different kinds of perspectives and articles. That's what I love about mags. Yeah. A blog was just like, it's a little too academic for me, if I'm being honest. And by saying that, I'm not saying that I've recently read some blogs that were awesome. So it's fine. Sure. But to do it, I think what you're talking about are these people that spent half their day reading blogs all day when it was hot. And that's like all they did. Yeah. And like that's the thing that I could never understand, because you got the sense that when when blogging was like the new American pastime, right? It was like, I just couldn't get it because it was a little too dull for me. And it doesn't mean the writing was bad or
that's right,
you know, all that stuff. It just meant for me, it was like, I just don't have any interest in that. Cause gee whiz, dad, there's no pictures, you know, kind of a thing.
But dude, totally. I do have a Substack now, by the way, clock.substack.com.
Yeah, for sure. Go for it.
So just absolutely. Promoing it.
I'm all in. I read it every day.
And I'm enjoying it, you know, although I don't know how materially it differs from having a blog, but it feels different. Dude, do you guys remember when people would argue on their blogs? Like, this is how beefing used to happen before there was Twitter.
the comment section.
Comment sections, dude. People would like go at each other in comment sections of blogs. And that strikes me as very sort of quaint and like in like vintage at this point, but I guess now we have social media for that, but it was kind of funny to think about how it used to
vintage hate vintage hate vintage was so hate. Much better so yeah. much better than current hate,
dude. Yes, I was you know, one of the early adopters. It was so much better,
dude. Yeah. Retro hate was sweet,
baby. Retro hate should be the name of the next book that we write.
Oh, 100%.
That sounds like a Dan Kimball title from like 2003, you know, vintage hate. He's got the pompadour and the whole
that's
thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. What happened to that guy, Dan Kimball? I feel like he was somebody.
I think he's still like pastoring and chugging along. I don't think that has not, I don't think he's gone anywhere. I think there just was sort of a move, you know, trendiness moved away from him, but I think he's just sort of stayed steady.
Good for him.
I'm thinking about comment sections, and what amuses me when I look back on it is the sort of snide dismissal of those debates by those, you know, like it's so petty. Yeah. That's, you know, the blog commenters by like academics and pastors who do the exact same thing in their own, like the platform is what made this stuff petty in their mind, even though they were having the exact same debates and being just as, like, nobody's as petty in their debates as academians. And yet, because it lived on the internet and these people were young, you know, these youngins, it was so dismissible. Right. And which is part of what makes it so interesting to me. Like, you know, you guys talk about not being kind of drawn into blogs. I think the reason I was intrigued by them because I worked in publishing, but I never was a blog follower
Yeah.
Mainly because they allowed people to be prolific, and prolific is rarely interesting.
Yeah.
You know, if you're writing a piece a day, I want to read on average 1 out of 10 to 20 of those. But I don't want to look at your blog every day to find out which one it is. I need somebody else to recommend it to me.
Yeah, really no, that is good. And I remember Pipe, and I've told the story ad nauseum on the pod. As soon as the publishing industry sort of got its mind around collectively the blogosphere, like they were, if you were an author, like they were not demanding, but like severely encouraging that you blog every day. And my response to that was similar to yours. Like, I don't have something good to say every single day. And I will blog when I have something good to say. And the guys that blogged every day were the ones that made it. So they were right. I was wrong.
Well, and yeah, what they discovered, and I don't think they were doing it on purpose, they being the bloggers, is that most people are not discerning readers.
That's
most
true.
People, yeah. Most people will read everything somebody they like puts out, even if it stinks. You know, I can't think of there are very few writers in the world who I enjoy everything they write. Yeah. And they're usually people who release novels every 3 to 10 years because it takes them that long to produce something good. Or they're dead now, like Pat Conroy. And so, but bloggers, they discovered, they're like, if I put something out every day, the way the internet works is that generates traffic and it generates recommendations. And people became fans of the blogger without sort of discerning which of these pieces is excellent.
Yeah.
And you know, with somebody like, say, Trevin Wax, like Trevin was very much using it as an exercise in growing as a writer, sort of writing practice. I think Jared probably was to a degree too. And which means that some of it's good, a lot of it's mediocre, some of it's downright bad. They're probably embarrassed by some of the stuff they wrote early on.
Sure.
But somebody like you wants to do practice in private and publish what you're proud of.
Yeah.
And that's not how blogs worked.
Well, that and the Substack thing now too, if you guys have noticed, it's been all like, you know, like when somebody prominent comes on and says, hey, you know, I'm starting a newsletter, and like at the most, it's something that drops once a week. And that's if they decide to be consistent.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. And the model's a little bit different. Like people can support it financially and get different content. And yeah, I find myself using it and enjoying using it for stuff that I know has no practical home anywhere else, you know, and hopefully people enjoy it. But yeah, so there's definitely a like self-serving, this is just stuff I want to write kind of vibe to it. And maybe that's how some people use the blogosphere, but I remember it being a really short runway between the blogosphere starting and then guys of a certain kind of bearing, kind of trying to figure out how to leverage it, you know? And so to your point, Pipe, with the algorithms and traffic, and I can't imagine being less interested in anything. Like, I think I had a blog for 5 years. I never checked the numbers. Like, I didn't even know how, you know, like it just never occurred to me to want to do that. But, you know, everybody's a little different. Anything more to say on blogs and stuff? You guys got anything?
If we make any more comments, we'll just be like old school bloggers. Where
we are being bloggers right now. I'm almost falling asleep. We need to move on.
Dude, do you ever like imagine what would happen if like old school writers had blogs? Like what if like Louis L'Amour had a blog? What would it be like?
I mean, dude wrote so much. I'm pretty sure he published a novel about every day. So like it would have just been serialized like.
Serialized Western
Fad the mysterious cowboy rides in to help the widow with two children against the attack from bandits over and over and over again.
Exactly. That would have been awesome. I'd follow.
Pipe, did your pops ever have a blog or no?
Oh, great question, baby.
Did he ever have a blog? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Desiring God's website had what they called a blog for a long time, and he would write, you know, once or twice a week for it. But that, you know, that became sort of a web-based ministry. So now there's, you know, it's not really a blog anymore. Like he will contribute articles here and there. But
those
were
like
never,
the original way
had,
they
like,
did
a,
articles.
A personalized thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Boys, let's take a break. And then we'll talk about a thing related to pastors and social media. We'll be right back.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
All right, boys, we're back. Your note on this one, Piper, and this is one where you guys are going to have to guide me through it because I'm fascinated by this conceptually, but I've never actually seen it in practice. The comment was how pastors get weird on social media when they transition out of the pastorate. So pastors who ostensibly come onto social media as pastors, then they become something else, and then they get weird. Pipe, who were you thinking about / what were you thinking about when you suggested this?
So I'm gonna be slow to throw out names on this one because weird is like if they were being crazy, I would call them out by name, but it's more just like the tone of the posts. So I can think of 3 to 4 guys off the top of my head who spent many years in like lead pastor positions, church planters, whatever. Then they make the transition to whatever that next kind of phase of ministry is, usually some sort of encouraging other pastors, you know, in these guys' case. And when they were pastors, so much of what they were posting was just more sort of like clear encouragement. It was drawn out of their experience in ministry. Then they make the switch, and it's as if they have been taking coaching from our very own Ronnie on Yoda tweeting, except with like sweeping statements about ministry, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, man, y'all got like Yoda meets John Maxwell in 5 minutes after you stepped out of the pastorate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to be a common enough thing. I mean, and maybe I'm just in this niche. That's probably the case. It is the social media after all, but yeah, there's just this weird switch to like inspirational. You get a lot more of this sort of like pastors often think this, but this is actually the case. You get, you know, these massive juxtapositions. You get a lot of, like people pray for your pastors on Monday. They probably want to quit their job and jump off a cliff, that kind of stuff. And I'm like, I know a lot of pastors and like Monday's a tired day, but that's a bit overwrought.
They're not suicidal.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, like, they drink a little extra coffee. They need a little extra quiet. Encouragement does go a long way. You know, the text from people who are like, hey, man, still thinking on your sermon, super helpful. Like, those kinds of things are great. But, like, they sort of take the hard things from their ministry and amplify it into, like, their new ministry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and that can be a little bit outsized.
I want to let Ronnie respond to this because you invoked his name in that. I have a couple of ideas as well, but baby, how does all that like land on you? Have you seen this?
Well, yeah, I mean, for sure. Cause I think a lot of it, I mean, to Pipe's point is I think a lot of it when guys transition, they immediately feel a little bit lost. Right. Mm-hmm. And so all of the, you know, when you're in that weekly, you know, that week after week sort of mode of preaching, you know, and you're constantly communicating and instructing and teaching, and then you're not doing that anymore, you know, on that, in that sense. And so I think it just becomes something where they're so used to something coming out of them.
Yeah.
They have to find another outlet for that to happen because it's they're lacking the consistency. So yeah.
Sure.
And a social media post has so many limitations. It's not a sermon. So yeah. I think that tends to lend itself to more sweeping statements, and I think it's like dudes that are trying to say, hey, do my words still matter? Is there still an audience, yeah. For my words? Do I still have something to say that people want to listen to? So yeah. I think there's a lot of grasping and insecurity there, and kind of I got to find my way now. And or hey, like Pipe said, I'm moving into a role now, which is just similar but different. So now I got to reestablish.
Yeah.
So, I think Pipe's right. It's interesting. Yeah.
One other observation to throw into this mix, because it might add to your feedback. Mm-hmm. There is also you see them lean into like their best attempt at having poetic chops. When they were pastors, they would just like take a phrase from a Bible verse and be like, this should encourage our souls today. It's pretty, pretty cut and dry. And now they're like, they're kind of trying to be poetic, sort of John Dunnish.
John Denver.
That's right, John. Take me home.
See the lilies of the field and how they spin as I go home on my country road. Yeah,
there's a lot. This is why I invoked Ronnie's name, because Ronnie is a pastor who is not afraid to kind of do his kind of poetic leaning into the artistic on social media. Never been shy about that. Reflecting on beauty and these different things. These guys go from like kind of cut and dry Bible teachers to like trying that, but it feels very sophomoric. Yeah, they're not good at it, and it sounds like an 18-year-old trying to write a love song kind of thing. another observation. I'm like, where was all this when you actually pastored? Like, if that was of significance to you, why did you have to like be safe from your congregation before you could try creative stuff? Like, what? I don't understand that bent either.
That's nice. That's kind of you too, Pipe. Can I just throw this in, boys? I think part of the reason for that is that they haven't yet taken my, and I'm just going to introduce it today, my cohort on how to post more poetically post-pastorate. And it's a six-week course.
How to post post-pastorate. Yeah. I love it. That's going to be massive.
Sign-ups are going to go up soon, probably after the final rant.
It'll be your post podcast posting post pastorate cohort.
Guys, do you love Song of Solomon, but you never knew how to tweet it out that way while you were still preaching week to week?
Join
Big R's new cohort on how to learn how to just absorb Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, and all the Psalms every time you tweet.
Two fawns, column, colon. Three things strike me as fascinating about this so far. One is the way that we're using the word transition, which has very different connotations societally, but we're invoking it in kind of a similar way to talk about just like pastors being done pastoring. I think that's really funny.
They no longer identify as pastors.
They no longer identify as pastors, but they now, Pipe, they all identify as leaders. And I think there's probably like a one-to-one kind of parallel between guys at a certain age and they start reading leadership books. I've seen it happen to guys like mid to late 40s. It's whatever age you are when you realize the thing that you thought you were good at, you're actually not all that good at, and you got to like find something else, right? So a lot of guys, they start reading the leadership books and then they think of themselves as leaders, because it's such a cottage industry. And it's like, well, clearly after I finish pastoring, I can't just not be on the internet, Oh no, I've got to reimagine my public persona. And I think that's the third thing, like the sort of presupposition that like, well, I can't just go away. I've got to kind of reemerge as something else. And I don't know. I think that the leadership thing, it's all part of the transition.
Well, and oh baby, let's not jump the shark too quick here, because a lot of these guys that move on from pastoring 100% still identify as pastors.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Pipe will agree with that too.
Yeah, that's true.
That's fascinating to me. So the question that comes to my mind is, are there parallels in other industries? So after you, I don't know, get done being an engineer or, I don't know, a plant manager at 3M or whatever, or a college professor, are you still sort of rolling out of bed going, at my essence, I am a plant manager at 3M. You know, this is who I am.
You know? If it's more professional, you actually are, right? So like if a dude is like a doctor and he quits practicing medicine and he wants to move on to like giving seminars, I mean, he's still going to be Dr. Smith or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's still like, that still works for him.
Yeah.
To continue his career.
So but what if he's a doctor who just wants to, I don't know, play golf and spend his money or whatever. Is he still, you know what I mean? Like there used to be this kind of like line of demarcation between I'm working and I'm not working, but
I'm not practicing anymore. Blurry.
Yeah,
I'm not pastoring anymore. I'm not practicing anymore. Yeah, I don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's also tied up in like, it's just, I mean, dude, it's all over the map, right? You read some, mm-hmm. you meet some dudes and they're like, dude, I'm so happy to be retired and to move, you know, I've moved on to something else. I'm stoked. I'm so stoked I'm not doing that anymore. So yeah, you don't have to refer to me as a doctor, pastor, like whatever it is. And other guys, I think they don't know who they are anymore because, they, you know, obviously their identity is so wrapped up in it. But
well, and that's particularly true for not for guys who retire, but for guys who quit. And I don't mean that they are quitters. I just mean like at 45, 47 years old, they've been pastoring for 15 years and they stop pastoring. They are lost. You know, you look at somebody like Ray Ortlund who pastored with a plan of stepping out in retirement and then moving into a phase of encouraging other pastors. And you're like, he actually is still pastoring in a very real sense because he's doing the people work. And, and so there's retirement sits better with pastors, you know, when they willingly step out at the end of a career, they hand off a ministry, then the guys who are like at 45, they're like, I'm burned out or whatever, I'm going to step out of this. And then there's this weird lostness because they're not usually real great at interacting with the local church. They don't really know what to do. They don't fit anywhere. They're too experienced to just sort of be a member, but they're not on staff anywhere. So they're not actually pastoring. The irony of claiming the leadership title is that they actually stepped out of a position of kind of utmost leadership.
Yeah.
And so there's pastors who leave ministry and go into the marketplace do better. Because they sort of take on a new, like, this is a thing to devote my attention to and learn a new set of skills and whatever else.
Yeah.
And it so it loses its sort of weird pseudo-identity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if the last 20 years have taught us anything, it's not important to actually be a leader. It's just important to be able to talk about being one. So, I don't know.
To be clear.
To be clear. Boys, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll hit this third topic real quick. We'll be right back.
What impacts you every day? There is one book that influences almost every aspect of our lives. Museum of the Bible reveals the Bible's impact on your favorite musicians and artists, the way we measure time, social justice, our national monuments, and more. The Bible's impact is all around you. Discover how at museumofthebible.org/impact.
All right, boys, we're back. We got one that feels real throwback. This was a listener suggestion, and the topic is this. Mega churches are still doing weird stuff like Star Wars-themed decorations. Did this happen in real life? If so, where? And if so, what did it look like? And then I've got some follow-up questions. Pipe, what do you got on this one?
The answer is yes, it did still happen. And I'll give you two guesses as to where, because I feel like there's a real good chance you can peg this one.
Ooh. I want to go somewhere in Colorado or Wheaton. Chicago suburbs.
Yeah, it is one of those two, yes.
Okay. Let's go somewhere in Colorado.
Colorado Springs. So
let's go, yes. Baby.
I mean, it had had to be one of the evangelical havens where the weird pseudo culture can still thrive. Yeah. So I don't know all the details, but I know that it just sort of made its rounds on social media, and one of our listeners pointed this to us and was basically like, "Hey guys, can you go in the Wayback Machine and talk about this kind of thing?" There was a large church in Colorado Springs that decked out the entire church in Star Wars, like a Star Wars themed church. I'm assuming it has something to do with the sermon series, and without knowing any of the details, I'm assuming that there's some combination of like an entry point being the Force and the Holy Spirit, possibly.
Yeah, good.
Or some sort of like good and evil aspect here, like we are rebels against the Empire of Satan or something along those lines. I'm guessing here.
I have a question. And Ron, have you seen this? Have you seen images of it?
Dude, I just saw the one image somebody posted, Pipe, of like just the front of the people standing inviting everybody into their Star Wars church. That's all I saw.
How good of a job did they do visually? Like, I'm just kind of thinking how fun it would be to like walk onto a Star Wars set. Like, irregardless of anything spiritual, it would just kind of be fun to have that experience. You know what I mean?
They did a pretty good job. I mean, I only saw a couple images, but I mean, it was like full on like TIE fighters hanging from the ceilings of their lobby.
Oh, that's spectacular.
So yeah, I mean, and I'm assuming that they were, you know, they're big paper mache, and you know, the women's ministry did it or something like that as their service to the church.
Well, and it's a stereotype, Pipe. It's unbelievable.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was I not stereotyping prior to that?
Stereotype. Just thinking that it had to be a woman that did all the paper mache.
Just Princess Leia running to Michael's. Yeah. You know, getting her
Princess
paper mache.
Princess
Leia
ran into Michael's. Right.
Yeah.
What's next? Michael's. Chewbacca served the coffee.
No. Yeah. Not Michael's. Hobby Lobby. They're the Christian.
What's next? That's Han Solo gave the message.
For the love of God, get it right. And genuinely, for the love of God, get it right.
What's next? Luke Skywalker was the worship leader.
Yeah. Oh, Skywalker would definitely be
sensitive.
The worship leader.
What's next? Yeah. Han Solo gave the super macho screaming in everybody's face message.
Yeah, for sure. That's good.
Yeah.
So
Darth Vader is the executive pastor for sure. Everyone just getting yelled at and fired.
Darth Vader's either the executive pastor or the children's women's director, one or the other.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it. This begs the question: what other like large movie franchises would you like to see megachurches co-opt? Because I think it'd be really fun to do a thing where you do like an Indiana Jones thing, and you're like running away from that boulder, but the boulder represents like sin or whatever. You know what I mean? You're kind of fleeing it.
Well, I mean, Avengers is just ripe because there's so many characters. There's, you know, the graphics are, they really pop.
Yeah.
There's villains of various different kinds. Could do a lot. You could do a lot with Avengers. You know, you could draw all sorts of parallels between like, I don't know, Captain America and Jesus. If you want to get weirdly political. You can go any number of ways, you know, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Lord of the Rings would just be primo, man. Just
that's almost too easy.
Just the pastor comes. I mean, you wouldn't even have the pastor half the time. If it's like an 829 church, would just come up dressed as himself, maybe put on a robe.
The problem is people would be like, church or homeschool convention, which is this?
That's a very blurry line as it is. Yeah. I think that'd be interesting. I think Rocky could work. You know, you've got
that's had to have happened.
You got your megachurch pastor who's spending 45 hours a week at his CrossFit gym anyway. He's just dying for a chance to like pull his shirt off. I think it's a short runway to that.
Do y'all remember? Sure. Y'all remember Carmen? Carmen basically did that. He did a whole like music. It was like a 12-minute like song/music video of Jesus boxing Satan. So,
great.
Like, there's you can draw into also like you got Rocky, you've got Carmen. We could do a lot with this. There's a lot to work.
It's endless. It's limitless. Yeah.
It really is limitless. You could do that one, baby. Remember we saw that movie.
The Holy Spirit is your drug. Your limitless drug.
Dude, right, I love that. That was a great movie.
That was a fun one, wasn't it? Yeah, the executive pastor's like down on all fours, like rubbing the medicine on his gums and stuff there in the third act. I don't know. It could be a lot of fun. Have some fun with it. You
know? Always the XP taking all the hits.
Always the XP taking the hits, dude. Hey, I need your help on something. I don't go to a mega church and I never have. Like, what is an executive pastor? Because in my mind's eye, he's sort of the, like, the CFO type, just kind of doing the books, but they call him a pastor. What is it? Is that, am I right there? Or am I off base?
He's usually the guy in a big church that does HR, like oversees the staff.
Okay.
He has his hand in all, he makes sure all the finances are kind of doing what they need to do. He'll be the guy that kind of like leads the building projects and kind of works out all the details for that kind of stuff.
Okay.
He's basically like the guy that's in charge of all the operations.
Yeah.
You know, usually.
Yeah. So he's not like the,
Well, and he's also, and he gets the title of pastor because a lot of that work he's doing is pastoral by nature, you know, especially if he's dealing with different like teams and, you know, like if he's running a deacon ministry, if he's overseeing a deacon ministry. So he'd be doing a lot of pastoral oriented work.
So are they like, are they throwing him into the pulpit 1 to 2 times a year? They let him,
preach,
stretch his legs out, get a little preaching in under the belt.
For sure.
If, fair, if he can't preach, he shouldn't be called a pastor. So
I
have strong feelings about the executive pastor role as it has been construed at many churches, because it's really more like an executive director or a director of operations, like a COO. And because the church doesn't actually lean very heavily into the pastoral side of things in terms of, you know, shepherding people, for example. And so those things are often at odds with one another. Like if you have to be the one who's sort of the hardliner on budgets and hiring practices and operations kind of stuff, and you're trying to shepherd people, that's a tough combination. So I think it's a pretty unhealthy position the way it is set up at many churches.
That's legit. Yeah.
And they're not really pastors at a lot of churches. There are some where they are, but then a lot of churches, it's more just like because they hold as much authority as they do, they call them pastor.
Sure.
But there's not the sort of, they're not doing the work of pastoring in a lot of instances.
No, that makes total sense.
Send your hate mail to ronnie@substancechurch.org.
Dude, man, Pipe just threw down, getting all hardcore.
Pipe
on
threw
XP.
Down, dude. Here's my thing with executive pastors, and I love what Pipe said about it. I think if you are one of these guys, you should have to dress like an executive. You should have to dress like Gordon Gekko, like Brooks Brothers every day, slick back hair. You should have to carry like an old school, like 80s briefcase, leather with like the clasps. You have to embody the role. You don't get to wear like a North Face quarter zip and a little scruff on your beard. You got to go full Gordon Gekko. Mm. That would be my take.
It's hard to disagree with that, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's just, I mean, if you're the 45-year-old, like, lead pastor with a Messiah complex, like, sure, you can wear your little V-neck shirt and show off your CrossFit muscles and all that. But, like, executive past, dude, that's a little different deal.
You need to look respectable.
You got to look respectable. You got to be
like
able to
a gentleman.
Go into that boardroom and look like a gentleman. Exactly. Own it.
Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah. Boys, We really have wandered to and fro throughout all three of these topics. I feel like that's a true statement today. And it was very vintage Happy Rant. We laughed a little bit. Like, I laughed out loud genuinely a couple times.
You did a couple times. I remember that.
Yeah, I guffawed. Piper got a little frisky, went at the whole idea of executive pastors.
Super, like, angry. Old school, like, Piper anger on XPs. It's so classic.
Old school Piper anger. You got on us for being sexist about the Princess Leia thing. That was very
100%,
vintage.
Man. Yeah, a lot of vintage hate going on today, for sure.
A lot of vintage, frisky, like, early blogosphere stuff going on just in our three personas today. So that was good times. Listeners, more good times to be had in the great city of Indianapolis, my old stomping ground. September 24, Happy Rant Live. Navigate to the website, go to the computer, you know, close down betweentoworlds.blogspot.com and navigate over to whatever our website URL is and buy a ticket. We would love to see you there. And until next time.
We want to take a moment to thank the team at Life Audio for partnering with us on this podcast. Be sure to go to lifeaudio.com and take a look at the other podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more.
Hey everybody, I'm Dale.
And I'm Tamara.
We're hosts of the Kainos Project podcast,
where we help you tackle ancient Christian truths in an everyday settings.
To learn more and subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.